College football fans, welcome back to the College Ball Show. He's Marshall. I'm Chris. And we're here to banter back and forth, maybe do some predictions, talk about the betting lines, pick an upset of the week, all that good stuff. Of course, we're going to recap some college football stuff from week three. Although there were some upsets, don't get me wrong. Fresno State pulled the upset over UCLA. Couple of teams got kicked out of the top 25. Yep, I'm looking at you, Miami. You're out. But there was a lot of almost last week, you know. Georgia Tech almost beat Clemson. Nebraska almost beat Oklahoma. Florida, it didn't look good early in that game, and they almost beat Bama. It's kind of interesting. You know, I've heard a lot of talk so far after Saturday about this year is like wide open. When you start to look around, Ohio State's not as strong. Oregon beat them by a touchdown, but almost lost the week before against what it looks like a good Fresno State team. You start to kind of look around. Cincinnati almost lost on the road at Indiana, even though that score doesn't look like it. So do you believe in Iowa as a national championship caliber team? I mean, maybe to get to the Final Four, but do you have them leading the pack right now and saying, oh, yeah, dude, they got the squad to win it all? No, you don't. But it's pretty wide open. A&M will have a chance to prove themselves in the top 10 this week. It's kind of interesting, man. If you look at Penn State, they have a lot of quality ones thus far. They really do. They ended up winning 28-20. So, like I said, we are going to recap week three. Of course, we'll do our crafty, crappy pick of the week, which didn't go as well as we wanted this week. But then we're going to look ahead, preview, and predict. Like I said, we like to talk betting lines here. We like to talk about, of course, the marquee matchups, but some games that are flying under the radar. There's a good chance that you're a hardcore college football fan if you're listening to the show. So we like to talk about some games that'll just be good to watch. Keep an eye on them for the second half. Keep an eye on them on it for the fourth quarter. But coming up this week, number 12, Notre Dame, and 18, Wisconsin. Wisconsin's a six-point favorite. Haven't looked that good. A&M at Arkansas, that's going to be a tough game. So there definitely is some interesting matchups, let's say. Michigan State gets in the top 20th. Let's see how they play against Nebraska, who looked good last week. So there is some interesting games that we'll go over before we jump into it. But real quick, if this is your first time listening to the College Ball Show, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeitoperadio. You know, you don't have to listen to it on Blog Talk and Rope It Up and download the show directly there or listen to the browser if you don't want to. You can find the Rope It Up Radio podcast where you find this College Ball Show on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn, Stitcher, Sticker, all sorts of places. You're also part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com? And one more thing, if you're thinking about cutting the cord, or you're not quite happy, I got something for you. It's called DirecTV Stream. The prices start as low as $69.99 a month. The best of live TV and on demand. All your apps in one place with access to over 7,000 apps. No annual contract, no hidden fees. If you upgrade to the Choice or Ultimate, that gives you a couple things. HBO Max for 3 months, plus you can enjoy regional sport networks with no additional fees. That's obviously becoming an issue more and more around the country. And right now, if you upgrade all the way to the premium package, that already includes HBO Max and Showtime. Something to think about there. DirecTV Stream. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and bring in my co-host, Marshall, and see how he's doing on this fine Tuesday late afternoon. What's going on, Marshall? You're okay. There we go. I was gonna say you're still muted. What's going on, buddy? How you doing?
It's a good day. I'm still a little upset with some current NFL teams who made my Sunday miserable. But you know what? It is what it is. It's just sometimes all-stars have bad days, and sometimes my guy like Derek Carr looks like a stud. So moving on from that, I'm excited because we get we essentially get a 4-day weekend of teaching this week, and then we get a real 4-day weekend of teaching in 2 weeks. So I'm going to be able to enjoy a lot of college football, pro football, baseball playoffs. Like this is the best time of year for sports, and we have a little extra easier work schedule this year with how our district set it up. So the fall should be a lot of fun, Chris. That just means more games for me to watch and break down on our show and hopefully make some money and just enjoy the beautiful sport it is we get to talk about. For my, I guess, opening rant, I pretty much felt all emotions possible for USC. Last week I told my buddies I felt very confident betting and predicting a win financially for USC because a new coach was going to walk in the door. I should say a new coach was on the field with Clay Helton being fired. You had an idea of, hey, maybe it's a new beginning for USC. Like Helton's gone. I'd heard during the week that the new coach was altering like the players' dress codes and there was more strict rules for meetings and regulations. And he was maybe trying to get just more control of the team in a positive way. And then to see that Keaton Slovis, who was, you know, been a pretty good quarterback for USC for the last year, got hurt in warmups and only threw one pass in the game. I'm like, oh my God, seriously, like it's a new chapter and we're down 14-0 to Washington State, who's a pretty garbage football team this year. But then this quarterback named Mr. Dart comes in. Apparently this kid's got a can, like NFL type cannon arm, and it went from a 14-0 second quarter lead to USC got a touchdown before half. They recovered a fumble right at the start of the second half and ended up winning 45-14. So, Chris, it wasn't a Rose Bowl victory with Sam Darnold, but it's probably one of the best wins USC has had in a handful of years because it's a new regime. Again, the players are becoming more accountable for each other and the team, and it's just kind of a breath of fresh air. And I know
the best win in a handful of years.
Well, in regards of it just being refreshing, like it's a new beginning. Okay. Like I'm just, you know, because the wins we've had in years prior haven't meant much because it never led to a Pac-12 championship, and a good win would be followed up by a shitty loss.
So they didn't win the Pac-12 under him.
They did. But
get done saying they didn't do that though? I like to be technical myself. Okay. I don't know about you.
It's the happiest I've been as a fan to see a new direction and just the fact that Clay Helton's gone. So I'll say that. And hopefully this Dart kid might be the real deal. Like there are some people thinking that like Slovis, like, dude, I know you didn't want to get hurt during pregame warmups, but apparently this Dart guy, like he was the ESPN like player of the night Saturday. Like I guess this kid put on a show, and obviously it's massive, massive long ways to go for learning how to play quarterback for sure. But the arm strength on this guy is like, you know, incredible. So I'll say this is the happiest I've been on our podcast talking about USC for a long, long time.
Wow, man, a win over a self-proclaimed shitty ass team. And this guy, I mean, hire this guy who was ever there. They always got a new young quarterback, and then by the time he goes pro, it's like I'm glad he's gone.
That was a rhetorical statement. I don't need you. It's your opening. Don't be stepping on my victory parade rant here. Come on now, come on, brother.
Victory parade. All right. Well, here's the thing. Just to go with this theme here. Florida rushed the ball 245-91 on
Jesus.
Yeah, on Bama. And that's getting down 21-whatever quick. It was like 21-3 before you knew it. And it was like, oh boy, here goes another blowout. But you know, to Florida's credit, they grinded it out. Next thing you know, you look up and it's a game. Early third quarter, it was a game. And it was after that. Let's talk a little bit about this game, because I was pretty impressed that Florida hung that well. We know, we talked about going into it, their offense was ridiculous last year. It really was. They lost a lot of talent, but they put up a lot of yards, especially, like I mentioned, running, and actually outgained them 440 to 331. You know, Bama didn't look great after looking great, you know, for the first couple of weeks. Now, you know, we could say, who did they play? Well, you know, you're looking at that Miami team's really not all that good. So, you know, whatever. We're not going to sit there and you know, play Monday morning quarterback too much. But when you look at, like I mentioned, Clemson struggled. Oklahoma barely got past Nebraska. Does this kind of feel like an open year here down the stretch, and we may have like a handful of one loss teams here that will all be battling it down the stretch? Or is it just Bama finally look just okay and very good at times? Or maybe Florida's that good. But I was impressed with Florida, especially like I mentioned, being down 21-3. And it just has that feeling. Clemson hasn't looked good this year yet. Like, it kind of has that feeling of maybe we'll get a surprise team in the top four.
I think you asked me four questions at once. Now I kind of know how you feel when I give you my surprise pop questions. This show is not off to a good start for me. I need to be on my P's and Q's.
So. Need a pen and a paper and just write it down. Yeah. Okay, he said this, then he said this, then he said this.
And responding to my rhetorical statements, I got to be ready to. It's going to be a long hour. I do maybe for once, Bama's maybe not quite as super sharp as normal. But I mean, again, this is a school like, you know, Chris, LSU, I think, is given a little bit of a slack for how they've been, because they from that Burrow team, they had 12 players go pro. And not that it's 12, but that's pretty much the situation that happens every single year for Alabama, too, where Saban has anywhere from like 6 to 10 players in theory get drafted each year. And this was the third week of the year. And this is also a game where Florida, I mean, you know, last year for all their returning players, probably had a pretty good week of practice getting into it, because last year they almost beat Bama. They're always seen as the stepchild is the less superior team to Bama. So you had good effort from Florida. And maybe Bama was just, maybe for once, Chris, maybe they took their foot off the gas like they normally do. And they actually had a team kind of punch them back. Normally Bama's one of probably the best first half team in football for the past 5 years. And normally after that halftime, it means it's a wrap. But coming out of halftime, Florida won the third quarter 14-7, which, normally, the way Bama goes is they get up early and they kind of turn into coast mode, or they keep scoring. Well, Bama only scored 10 points in the second half. So it wasn't quite your typical second half of Bama. Maybe Florida was motivated. Who knows? Again, they have all they can play for it. Maybe to, I mean, if they had won that game, I can only imagine the hype that Mullen and the team would have. I mean, that would have been one of the biggest wins they've had in a long time. I'm not going to rip Bama too much, because, again, we hold them to such a high standard. For them to have a close competitive game against a highly ranked team is weird for them. But I think for any other team in the country, that's just probably relatively normal. And, yes, there does not appear yet to be a very strong, very dominant team. It does feel like A&M almost lost to Colorado in a 7-3 game, and Clemson is nothing of what they've appeared to be. So maybe we will for once have a truly enjoyable, fun debate of who could make the playoff. That's normally for the last couple of years been, well, we got the top three locked in, top four is probably locked, maybe flip a quarter between who should be five. And that 4-5 is normally anywhere from Oklahoma, Georgia, Ohio State, something like that, or Notre Dame. This year, we're looking at maybe a more fun discussion of who will be in the top four, or will there be only one undefeated team in the top four compared to only being two or three. So yeah, I do like it being open. And also, to preview later in the show, Alabama's next game in 2 weeks, Chris, is against Lane Kiffin on a bye week. So there could be a one in that last loss category coming up for Alabama here pretty soon, my friend, pretty soon.
They got a quarterback. I'll give him that. That's for
sure. He's the current Heisman favorite with Spencer Rattler. I think that's a little overhyped, but yeah, Corral is the current Heisman favorite with Rattler. So he's getting a lot of money.
Well, I mean, I don't know how overhyped it is. The dude had three touchdowns, 335 through the air, a cool 68 yards on the ground, and four touchdowns. He was the first SEC player to have three throwing touchdowns and four in a game. That's pretty damn good. And we know Tulane's not just going to roll over for you.
No, and I love the kid. They just haven't played a really high caliber team yet. But Tulane is.
I mean, Tulane is. Right. No, I'm just kidding. No, yeah, for sure. So we're gonna have Oregon. We're gonna have Cincinnati. We're gonna have BYU because everybody's got them winning out. And who? Penn State. That's who it's gonna be. This is gonna be dope, man. I can't wait for this Final Four. So Oklahoma. The highlight of the day almost got taken away from the poor kid. I mean, they're just getting sponsors now. Now they're taking away. You know, he could sell that highlight video at some point. Actually, I don't think he can. But that freaking one-hand grab, we got to check that dude's gloves because I think there was some extra stickum on there. But his coach almost took it away because he's like, well, if you would have dropped it, we would have had the ball not so far back. 23-16, Oklahoma sneaks by. Like you said, Clemson just looks real rough right now.
They can't score.
Oh, my God. 14-8. I mean, it took extra innings just to beat Georgia Tech, for Christ's sakes. And they, you know, I don't think Megatron's in the uniform. I don't think he's someone that like a red zone target for them anymore. So, I mean, that was impressive, I'll say, by Georgia Tech, but very weak by Clemson. So it and then Ohio State has been grinding it out with teams. It's not like they've been walking over shit, even us with their big plays they gave, you know, the Gophers gave up. They were down at half for the first time ever under Day. So it does kind of feel that way. We'll talk about a couple other games. But Auburn and Penn State came down to, you know, down to the wire, basically, 28-20. They had their chances down the stretch, like I mentioned. Turnover on downs after an 11-play drive, 73 yards. Couldn't punch it in. I mean, there was actually three different turnover on downs, two of them by Penn State, funny enough. What'd you think of that game? Because Penn State now... Now, we're going to find out exactly how good these teams are, but on the road at Wisconsin is always going to be a good win in my book. And sure. Now they got a solid win against Auburn. I mean, you got to put them up pretty damn high. What'd you think of this game? And then, like I said, man, you look around and it just – there was a lot of struggles. That interception might be the play of the year as far as – I should just say highlight of the year. Even though it came against Nebraska, but that Oklahoma defensive player, that was nasty, man.
Yeah, I'm clearly not a Penn State fan at all. But their whiteout stadium with like the pom poms, that is one of the coolest looking venues, and that place is jumping. I think their stadium's got to be close to 100,000 or 80 plus thousand for sure. So that normally is kind of a really fun night watch. For the game itself, again, it was close. I mean, they held on to the very end there. It was maybe the best last play call for Auburn to try to at least score and give themselves a chance to tie it up there at the end. And Clifford, the Penn State quarterback, who I thought really looked hideous against Wisconsin, clearly, you know, first game of the year, I'll gut you some slack there, but he didn't look hideous against Auburn. 28 of 32. I don't care who you're playing. That's a really impressive clip for a college quarterback. So he only had four incompletions. He had one pick, threw for 280. And Penn State ran the ball. The ball really wasn't even their bread and butter. They ran the ball 33 yeah. times for 84 yards. So, you know, and this is a quarterback who the coach wasn't impressed with in the preseason. So the backup was doing better. Maybe that's motivated Clifford. Clearly, Franklin's in no reason to want to pull him out. But again, four incompletions in a top-notch game on ABC on Saturday night in a sold-out Rockin' Place, even if it's your home arena, that's impressive. And again, you beat an SEC team. Normally the SEC Big Ten is not really a common matchup, but obviously one that's fun to hype up. It's probably the two best conferences in football competing head to head. So, I mean, everything was there for the game. And pretty much every team scored a touchdown every quarter. The only downfall was Auburn kicked a field goal in the first and fourth quarter. That was the only difference, 28-20. So I'd say it was an evenly played game. But yes, for Penn State, your resume is probably the best in the country so far. I'm not saying that they're the best team in the country as a football team, Chris, but yeah, you've beat Auburn and you won at Wisconsin. Like, that's as good as any other team I've seen around it, unless Fresno State would have beat Utah or would have beat Oregon and UCLA. Maybe that would have rivaled it, but they did lose to Oregon. So yeah, Penn State, man, they're playing good football. And they're really not even into the flow of conference play yet. I mean, everything is looking optimistic for them. Clearly, they always normally have a pretty tough Big Ten schedule because of the division they're in. Right. But I would say you're off to probably the best start they've been in a long time. You have a 10 next to you when they played Auburn that game. So, yeah, I would that was a good win. And for those saying that, you know, Bo Nix on the road is a shitty quarterback and he's, you know, a different guy than he is at O'Hare Stadium in Auburn. Like, he was 21 of 37, buck 85, a QB rating of 70. That's not awful, but it's not like, I don't think he cost his team the game. He had his team in a winning position to pull out the victory. So the Bo Nix on the road haters, I wouldn't say that he probably could have played better, Chris, but he wasn't hideous either. But just the fact that a Big Ten school being SEC is kind of a nice change of pace, because there is kind of that belief that the SEC is number one, the Big Ten is two or three. So a nice victory for a conference situation. And yeah, for Penn State, you're off to a good start this year. See if you can keep it up.
That Cincinnati Indiana game, we were saying, keep an eye on it. Let's see if Indiana can show up and look like they did, you know, anywhere near the team they did last year. And wouldn't you know, they got up 14-0. And down the stretch, though, fumble, interception, and turnover on downs. And, you know, health must be a factor with the quarterback, like we mentioned last week, because Penix was 17 of 40, three picks, did, you know, score or throw two touchdowns. But 17 of 40, 224 is not a good look. It was kind of an all-purpose running, you know, they got to a buck 52 in rushing, and they did it at a 4.1 clip. But Carr had 21 of 15, not great. One run, 37 yards right there. So I don't know, man. It's a nice win by Ritter in Cincinnati. And, man, when you start to look at Cincinnati, they got a bye week. Then they got Notre Dame. Then they got a game against Temple they should win. Then they got, you know, they're at Notre Dame and then Temple and then Central Florida at home. And you look at the rest of their games and you're like, all right, Tulsa, SMU, like, I don't know, man, but that 38-24 doesn't tell the story here, but kudos to Cincinnati to keep that momentum going from last year.
I'll say this. It is a good sign when a college football team wins when they play a really shitty first half. I watched that game. They were miserable in the first half. I think they had six false start penalties at least. Ritter was yelling at wide receivers. He looked hideous. The only reason, Chris, they stayed in the game really was because Cincinnati defense. The Cincinnati defense made a 4th-and-1 stop. They caused a fumble. I believe that Indiana missed the field goal. Like, that game easily could have been like 28-7 at half. But the Cincinnati defense literally bailed that team out from what would have been a really miserable, pitiful performance. And I'm not the biggest fan of Ritter, but I realize that the kid can run and has a decent arm. But their offense looked out of whack entirely. And when you have like six false starts in the first half, clearly you were not that maybe as focused as you should be going into the game. But the defense bailed them out. The offense found their feet in the second half, and that score, yeah, that score was very deceiving because that was a embarrassing, soon to be upset, which turned into a win. But again, if you're a good team in college football, you find ways, Chris, to win games when you're not always on your best 60-minute effort.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. The Pac-12 after dark action, even though both, you know, both of the opponents that won, by the way, weren't actually Pac-12, but just that vibe. Fresno beats UCLA 40-37. I think they were 11-point underdog. I thought they could sneak under the spread. Obviously, they did more than that. They were up 23-10 at half, and it was 23-17 first drive. You know, from Ukla 23-17, Fresno's up, and it kind of stayed that way for a while. Fresno was able to add a field goal, 26-17, kind of going back and forth. UCLA scores a touchdown. Fresno fumbles, scores a touchdown. I mean, that's when it started getting back and forth. UCLA got up 30-26. Fresno comes back 33-30. UCLA comes back 37-33. Fresno, I mean, that was a fun game to watch. And the Fresno QB, 39-53. A lot of times when you see, you know, 45, 50, 55 attempts, you go, well, you better have gotten the 300, dude. I mean, we see that in the pros now, right now. Sometimes it's like, well, you got to get the 300 if you threw the ball 45, 50 times. He got to 455, two touchdowns, did throw a pick, but 39-53 is damn good. And Rivers ran the ball really well. If it wasn't for those sacks, it would have even looked better. But he ran it for, you know, two touchdowns, 21-136. And it's not like Ukla didn't move the ball. They didn't run as much. But, you know, they kind of got off to a bad start. And here we are, you know, UCLA coming up with a big win and turning right around and taking a L. And I think I read someplace that it's like multiple games in a row, six in a row or something like that, that Fresno has beat UCLA, something. Maybe Fresno against – I don't remember, but it's been a couple in a row. There was that big joke on Twitter about it. You know, UCLA, I didn't think they'd necessarily go undefeated, but they're going to have to, you know, get their stuff together, no doubt about it. But that was a fun game, as was the other West Coast game, the Arizona State BYU.
Yeah, I mean, if you're Fresno State, I'm surprised there's almost not a ranking. Maybe there will be at the end of, attached to them at the end of the year. But you took Oregon to the very end of the game, and now you beat UCLA. Like, maybe you're not a top 15, 20 team, but you're sure as hell around 25 or 30 or worse. Like, that's a – we want to talk about resumes. I know they lost to Oregon, but, like, this Fresno State offense must be pretty damn good. They dropped 40 on UCLA. They were 5-for-5 in the red zone on Oregon's defense. Oregon beat Ohio State, by the way. So this Fresno State team is probably going to have some like 10-2 or 9-3 or 11-1 record and probably have a really nice bowl game just because the numbers their offense is putting up is against like elite or highly ranked Pac-12 teams, and they're hanging right in there. So you obviously can say this is an upset. Like, obviously, UCLA wanted to carry the momentum they had from their LSU victory. And it is an upset from a Vegas standpoint, but this is not like Fresno State is some garbage team. Credit to them. Again, you've had a really tough schedule. They're off to a good start. Clearly, this quarterback has no issues throwing the ball around in the red zone or across the field. So I will give them credit, but I think normally at the start of the year, Chris, when you see a ranked team lose to an unranked team, you're thinking, oh, well, you know, the top-rated team came out and just laid an egg or something. I don't think they laid an egg. Maybe they might have looked over past them a little bit, but this Fresno State team, I would say, is better than the regular early-season upset kind of college football team. This is a – if you went toe-to-toe with Oregon, UCLA, like you're – again, I'm not saying you're going to go beat Bama, but that's a pretty good start to the year. So maybe look – for them to be a team to bet on or, you know, make for, you know, a point spread pick or something like that. Because clearly this offense is is pretty impressive. And for UCLA, it's a non-conference loss. You're still clearly sitting in a good position to be fighting for your spot in the Pac-12, which they've not done for a while. And yeah, well, they just got to bounce back from it. But yeah, thankfully it wasn't a Pac-12 loss for them, so it doesn't hurt them big picture for their season-long goals, because I don't think any UCLA fan predicted they would run the table and make the Final Four like their basketball team did.
Yeah, and Oregon got up on them like 14-3 maybe or something like that, but it was – or 14-0, whatever. But it was tied with like – they got up on them 31-24 with like – I don't even remember, like, you know, like around the 5 minute, 4 minute, like there wasn't much time left. So that really tells you something. BYU got it done at home. That's 12 straight home wins now. And they forced four Sun Devil turnovers. And it was a fun game. Definitely went late night. There was also that Hawaii. Was it San Jose State? There was another late game that started even later then. I got off work that night kind of early, so I got to watch, like, you know, there was like an hour gap between almost every one of them, and I just kept DVR'd them all and then got to them slowly but surely. I was watching football till like 2 in the morning. It was a wonderful thing. But BYU, 27-17, and a lot of people, like I said, not Cincinnati, because they still have Notre Dame in Central Florida. But a lot of people think now BYU is just going to run the table. Obviously, it's early to talk about, you know, running the table. But I thought they looked really good. And, you know, Daniels threw a couple of rough passes. Otherwise, he played pretty good. And Hall, you know, just did enough. They ran the ball, kind of tough yards type thing. Got the job done. Got an early season rank versus rank win for BYU.
They're looking pretty good. As you've mentioned on a couple of podcasts now, their quarterback has an arm. The kid can play. Clearly, they always seem to play really well at home, no matter who they're playing. They seem to have a decent home crowd. That defense was ready to go as well. And I tip the cap to him too, because as I was saying on last week's show, Arizona State with Herm Edwards normally starts off the year really well, and they have a really talented quarterback themselves in Jaden Daniels. So you shut down a kid who has been a playmaker for Edwards. You shut down a coach who's won games almost every non-conference, and you beat him pretty handedly. So I think part of this, Chris, might be like a continuation of confidence from the team BYU had last year. And obviously you're replacing the quarterback now is playing for the Jets, but this new kid appears to be covering up the slack pretty well. And they've, for the last pretty much 2 years, they've been on a nice little run, and they got all the momentum they can get. And to give them credit, I'm not a fan, but they normally do schedule a really hard schedule every year for themselves. And they were a team who had the guts last year to throw in a random game against Coastal Carolina. So
that's,
I think,
right. And their quarterback got this ass kick for it too.
He did, but you know, they went out and did it, which a lot, you know, there's a lot of colleges that week who had a chance to play a game and chose not to and gave up whatever excuse you wanted to. So I think the whole momentum they have as a program is going in the right direction. And again, they're going to keep playing hard opponents. They always do. I don't know if they'll run the table, but they got a talented defense. They won a game I didn't think they would this past weekend. And they're tricky at home. They really are. And I bet you also that Utah, when we called that, I did call that last week. I said, you're either going to come out flat or you're going to go on like a 4-game win streak. Cause that's the first time in 10 years that they had beat Utah in the Holy War. So you get your biggest rival win for the first time in a decade. That could really lead to a good momentum swing for that team. And I think we're probably seeing the effects of that, at least for 1 week, Chris.
Yeah, definitely. Speaking of Coastal Carolina, they snuck by Buffalo 28-25. They definitely made that a good game. As a 6-point underdog, Michigan State slapped my Canes around. Another score that's kind of not indicative of how the game went, but that's how it goes when you mess up. Western Michigan in an exciting game over Pittsburgh. I saw just the bitter end of that one. Also, SMU, Louisiana Tech, the freaking Hail Mary. I mean, we had a variety of fun games. Memphis, we talked about that last week. I liked Memphis by, you know, as a minor upset. They got the job done against Mississippi State 31-29.
There were some awful calls in that game.
And also, UCF Louisville was a damn good game as far as high scoring on Friday. And then a game that, you know, finally it ended. It wasn't a great game, but Maryland and Illinois, 20-17. That was a fun game. Talk about some of those awful calls in that one.
For one, for Memphis, they literally had a punt return touchdown where Mississippi State punted the ball. And as usual, like the Mississippi State returner, like was going to like let it go because it was a decent punt. And you saw a Mississippi State player like dive for it and like grab the ball and touch it and set it down. So, okay. So you assume it was going to be like Memphis ball, like the Memphis 12, give or take. It was like 12 or 15 yard line, whatever. And you see the official wave his hands like, okay, like the play's dead. And as he's literally waving his hand motion, the Memphis punt returner grabs the ball, runs and picks it up. Again, after it had been downed, which would appear this was like it tipped a fingertip. This was an accident. Like the dude legit grabbed the ball and placed down. And the ref was blowing a whistle. And a Memphis kid comes and picks it up and takes it to the house for a touchdown. And it stood. I believe that even though the other team downs it, maybe the offense can pick it up. Maybe it's like a boom, boom thing. But this wasn't even like boom, boom. This was like the ref had his arms up and the guy came in like a couple seconds later, picked up and took it to the house. And you really can't blame Mississippi State for quitting the play because they just saw a teammate down the punt. And how that happened to be, I would have assumed reviewed and not overturned is mind blowing. And then later in the game, at the very end of the game, Mississippi State is doing an onside kick to come back and they recover the onside kick. But as it's being reviewed, the refs realized that there was an illegal downfield block. Like they kind of had like a wedge buster on the onside kick, but that wasn't realized during the live play. So they null and voided the Mississippi State onside kick recovery and dished out a penalty, which was only recognized by the video review. So you got, if you bet Mississippi State or were a Mississippi State fan, you got royally, royally screwed. Like, again, watch the punt return. The video clip is on ESPN. It's also on Twitter. I watched it because I was in disbelief. My buddy said Memphis got lucky. And I know getting lucky is a term you use for sports and gambling, but the dude touched the ball. And then the refs use a video review call to make up a call they missed. It's like, dude, that's about as bad as it can get to lose the game by 2 points. But Chris, that was the SEC refs that did that game should be like suspended for a week or something. Cause that was borderline just, awful is not even good enough of a word to use for the calls that were made in that game.
I remember Boise State got a questionable, I think it was a fumble that would have been a TD. Remember, that was a questionable one. There was another one, too. I can't remember which game it was. And it was like, what? What happened? No, that's their ball and they scored or something. I can't remember what else it was. But that Oklahoma State, Boise State, that was 21-20. So that one definitely hurt them. Boise State started that game looking like they were going to, you know, do some stuff. On a home front, my Gophers obviously take care of business. 30-0. They held them to negative 19 rushing yards because of a bunch of sacks. You know, Ibrahim, the senior, just solid, you know, one Big Ten running back of the year last year, got hurt, as we know. But Trey Potts has looked really good in his return. And they got this true freshman, Bucky Irving, who looked really good. He got like 15 carries as well. So I really wanted to see my you know, from a local standpoint, I wanted to see how the Gophers would do on the road. And I mean, some of the dude that they haven't shut out an opponent since 2016, haven't shut out a Power Five since 1977, and hadn't shut out a Pac-12 team since 1948. And that was Washington. So that's what's funny about some of these. There's probably 30 schools that played football way, way back, you know, way, way, way back. Like 100 sure. years ago. And it's funny to see some of these records, but it also shows you how rough it's been. It's tough to you know, have a shutout against a Power Five, but my Gophers look damn good, and they did get Autumn Bell back, their number one wide receiver. So now they got three legit wide receivers. They got a nasty line. The offensive line played one of their best games as a unit since it's been put together these last 3 years. So I was really happy with my Gophers.
And just to add on to something we know, because we're both lived in Minneapolis and you still do, and I've lived there for plenty of years, but to show the kind of coach PJ Fleck is, Mark Rosen, who has been like a Minneapolis sports reporter for over like 40 years and like just a well-known nationwide sports anchor, his wife passed away of brain cancer about a couple weeks ago. And he posted something on Twitter, I believe it was like this past weekend, and every single Gopher football player wrote like a personal handwritten letter to him just to kind of say like, you know, we're here for you kind of deal. And I guess one of the Gopher players as well had lost a father due to brain cancer. So just, it's something small, but I know some people think that PJ Fleck is just this rah, rah guy, but if you watch like these videos of when he interacts with the kids and just kind of the people he raises, he's one of those coaches where he might come off a little boisterous to you, but I'm a fan. Cause you see stuff like that. Like every single kid on the team wrote a really nice letter to a huge member of your sports society. Like that's just kind of the person and the head coach of that PJ Fleck and the Gophers have. And I can't help but like a guy like that. So just a side note, kind of good personal story of, you know, some positive traits that you hear from coaches, which normally don't make the news and media that much.
Yeah, and if he goes to USC, we're shutting this whole podcast down. if you laugh, I'm dead serious. so this week, no, you want to recap anything else? Because we are at the 42-minute mark, so we want to start to get into week four. Anything else? Because we got a couple of games we're going to talk about. And, of course, our crafty, crappy pick of the week.
Missoula, good. Tulane's defense looked bad. Ole Miss hung 61 on them in three quarters. So Lane Kiffin's got the boys rolling. But that's it. No, I'm ready to go to week four.
All right. So number 12, Notre Dame at 18, Wisconsin. The old quarterback is going against the one that replaced him. 6-point spread kind of makes me think like, Wisconsin at home is always good.
Well, no, it's at Soldier Field.
Oh, my bad. Good call. All right. And that makes sense. They've done that multiple times. I think Miami actually had to play up there once. Now I think about it. So 6-point favorite, that even adds more to it then. They're not at home. Okay.
I know.
Well, that even adds. Yeah. Okay. Wow. And then A&M, 5.5-point favorite. Not crazy that they're a favorite, but they're ranked really high. They haven't looked that good. At Arkansas, who we know, you know, 2 weeks ago looked pretty damn good at Texas. Sneaky West Virginia team. You know, can they sneak under that 16.5-point spread against Oklahoma, or will Oklahoma kind of wake up this week and go, I don't know what the hell that was, but we're looking better. Can Nebraska build upon an almost win over Oklahoma and play with Michigan State, who seems to be like a year ahead from where we kind of thought they were, or where I thought they were? Stanford and UCLA, you know, is that going to be like a great game as far as meaningful? Not totally, but it, you know, on paper, it looks like a pretty good game. And then as far as like another one, like I just mentioned, talked about West Virginia, Michigan, 20-point favorite against Rutgers. And I know it's funny to say Rutgers and all that. We know it's not, you know, early to mid-2000s. We get it. But 20 points to a team that just wants to run. That's what Michigan wants to do. Rutgers is looking okay. And if I remember correctly, last year, this game was like a tight-ass game. And I'm just looking at it like, huh. Yeah, it was 48-42. Michigan beat them in triple overtime. And I'm looking at 20 points going, huh, I feel like Rutgers can sneak under that. Let's start looking at the marquee matchups. Then we'll get to the games under the radar. Notre Dame at Wisconsin. What says you about this one here, sir?
I'm not sure why Wisconsin's favored by 6. Like, this offense has been shit since Martz has been quarterback, besides his first game ever against Illinois. And that was before he went and had his party on, like, you know, Camp Randall and got COVID. Like, I'm not saying that the Badgers can't win this game, Chris, but they're a 6-point favorite at a neutral site where I'm sure the crowd would pretty much be split. I would say Chicago is almost like a neutral location in theory to Notre Dame and Wisconsin, maybe even close to Notre Dame.
Maybe. So, I mean, you're right. It is. I know Indiana's close to Chicago, but it doesn't mean it's Notre Dame.
I would have this really as more of a pick 'em. I mean, what has Wisconsin done to really come off as impressive? Your offense looked really bad and your quarterback was awful against Penn State. You beat up Eastern Michigan. Okay. Notre Dame.
And then you get a bye.
Yeah. And Notre Dame beat a Florida State team who appears to be getting worse and effing worse, which I know my co-host loves.
I'm not crying.
Over and that. You got a little gut punch from Toledo, which could have been viewed as like maybe a good opponent. And you beat Purdue by 14, which is not incredible. So I don't think either team is really incredible yet or is either really bad, but with neither really showing you a whole lot, I think this should be really close to a pick 'em. And the motivational angle that I think you really got to look at, because, and I know people can bring up these up all the time with different avenues for picking winners and gambling, but the fact that Notre Dame's quarterback essentially got kicked off the team because he wasn't good enough to be a Badger quarterback is now facing his old school. I'd imagine Jack Cohn wants to have the game of his life.
Yeah.
You essentially got booted out of Camp Randall to let Mertz take over. So if you want to talk about a motivational angle for a quarterback, and again, I realize he's one person on the field of like of 100 that are going to play, but that's a hell of an angle. So you'd assume him and his offensive line, all of his boys are like, dude, we got you this game. Like, let's go take care of business. So I literally think this is a coin toss. I think that the Notre Dame tight end is going to be key, that Mayer, because he seems to be their main target. They have a good running back, which I saw versus Florida State. So I think they'll be interesting to see how the Badgers defense tries to slow down Mayer and the Notre Dame running game. And then if you're Wisconsin, I'm assuming you want to watch the film that Florida State had and see how they attacked the Notre Dame defense. But again, this is a Wisconsin offense who, when you're not playing a bunch of no-name schools, you're playing Big Ten opponents, their offense really has been really bad, Chris, since this quarterback's taken over. So I expect this to be a down in the fourth quarter game. I'm going to lean towards Wisconsin just because – I'm going to lean towards Notre Dame with the points especially, and I think Notre Dame wins just because until this was Wisconsin quarterback win a big game, I don't trust their offense. And the six-point spread, maybe we're missing something, maybe something crazy's occurred. I've not heard of any injuries or anything crazy, to my opinion. So
Vegas Notre Dame, sees it this way. Cheats again? I mean, what happened?
I don't know. I got nothing, but I will take the underdog with the points for sure. And I just don't trust it was Badgers quarterback. I think this will be a pretty low scoring game with good defense, but this point spread has me really confused.
So Notre Dame, I'll say this, Notre Dame's going to lose if they play 100 guys on the team. If they play all their 100 guys, they're going to lose the freaking game.
I've not been able to slip up once on this. I appreciate you holding me accountable, sir.
That would be crazy. They only got 85 guys on scholarship, but actually, you're wrong. This year, it is different. They do because of that COVID year. Shit, they got – maybe they can play 100 guys in this game. I'm with you, though, as far as Notre Dame and the points. I'm picking Wisconsin to win, though, because I think, you know, they still have that offensive line. And Florida State, one thing we do know is they had more injuries to that line that hasn't even proven that they're that good yet. They're not what they were like 3 years ago. That was really bad. But they got, I think, two injuries, and they still were right in that game. In Wisconsin, we know they got a line. I just don't – I don't see – the Badgers' merch quarterback doing what he did in the red zone in that Penn State again. So I'm with you on the points. That kind of throws me off, no doubt, but I'm going to pick Wisconsin outright. Let's try to pick up the pace a little bit. A&M at Arkansas. Is it a just take the Hogs in the points, or is A&M going to get it done? Because they do have their backup, you know, I was going to say point guard. They got their backup quarterback. Because their starting quarterback cracked his leg. That's what it says. He cracked his leg. It's like, he just cracked it? Like, I crack my knuckles all the time. I could play next week. But a cracked leg sounds really bad. 7 weeks for that cracked leg. What says you about this one here, Arkansas or A&M? My knee-jerk tells me Arkansas is going to get this job done.
I'm 100% with you. This Arkansas team has been improving every year for the past couple of seasons. They got robbed of an Auburn win last year. They've been playing Bama tight. This has been a well-coached team going the right way. They beat the crap out of Texas, hands down, smoked them. And now you're going to be an A&M football team who has struggled with Colorado, and you're going on the road to a place that would be dying for a win like this against a top five, top 10 team.
Prime time, too. CBS primetime 2:30 spot.
I'm taking Arkansas to cover and win. I think this is an upset. Yeah. I mentioned 100 players on the field, and you mentioned a point guard. So we're mixing our sports in, my friend.
I'm gonna go Michigan to win, but I think Rutgers is gonna get under that 20. Is my thing. Any other? What about West Virginia, Oklahoma? Can West Virginia sneak under that 16.5? Any other games that you'd like to go over in the top 25, or even, you know, of course, the games under the radar?
I got a couple of radar ones, but to start with the Oklahoma game, I think that we talked about maybe this isn't Nick Saban's best team ever. Maybe for once, Lincoln Riley, who is a quarterback genius, maybe Spencer Rattler's not quite that good yet. I mean, this kid, you know,
He threw
some hideous passes against Tulane. And I'm not saying it's all his fault against Nebraska, but Nebraska hung in there. They tried to slow the game down, and it was pretty much a touchdown game the entire game. If not for Nebraska's special teams blunders, they easily could have won that game. And they had a shitload of penalties like Cincinnati did in the first half. So They've played two teams that are good. I'm not going to give two craps about the Western Carolina 67-0 victory. They've played two games, and they've won both by a touchdown. So a West Virginia team that just smacked Va Tech, at least in the first half last week, I'm going to take a West Virginia team. I'm not saying they'll win, but I'll take them with the points to hang in there. I think Rattler is just going through growing pains, and maybe the kid is overhyped. This is the kid who got a ton of love, but a lot of people don't like him because I guess he wasn't the most likable human being on the QB1 show. I've heard a lot of people say that. I haven't seen it. But
He hasn't played that well as far as being the number one pick or whatever, you know.
Mm-mm. So I will take, man, I'm taking the points three games in a row. Dear Lord, this could be something magical or something awful.
Yeah, but, right? I started adding that up too. I'm like, man, I don't know how many more I can go up and limb here.
I'm taking a lot of dogs this week. We had a dog barking noise we play right now. So I'll take that. For a couple of under-the-radar games, a couple of teams I cheer for or enjoy watching, LSU, again, just for a fun one, LSU -2.5 at Mississippi State. That'll be a fun game. It should be close. LSU needs to – well, Coach O needs a win because those people want his head. And, you know, you win a national title, and 2 years later in LSU, if you're looking like shit, the fans want you gone. So if you're Mississippi State, you got royally screwed last week. That team can come out, you know, excited or maybe defeated. I don't know, but that'll be a good game. And then Missouri Tigers, that's pretty much my other favorite team along with USC. They travel up to BC. That game is a 2-point spread. Again, under the radar a little bit, but Missouri's still got the new coach, the new second-year quarterback. Mizzou's a two-point favorite. So essentially a pick-em on the road at BC. And BC, you know, has pretty much been a really bad team, but they have a new coach and taking over for Adazio. So those are both 11 a.m. games, two fun games to start off your day. Mississippi State, LSU, Mizzou, BC should both be fun ones. And I will cheer. I will go with Mizzou and LSU to win. I'm taking two more road teams. Man, I'm making some crazy picks this week, my friend. I'm taking dogs and teams on the road. This could be a brutal bloodbath next weekend of a podcast, Chris.
We may have to shut down the podcast.
If I go 0-5 on all five of those picks, you might go solo next week.
San Jose State, 3-point underdog to Western Michigan, who got a Power 5 win. That's your hardcore barn burner type of the week. There's a couple other ones, too. Okay, here we go. Louisville on the road at just a horrendous Seminole team right now. They're only 2-point favorites. This is one of these September games where I'm like, well, obviously Louisville's going to win. Did you see them last week? They look good. They beat a quality club. Watch Florida State pull this one out. But I like Louisville with the points. It seems like a pretty basic, you know, not too much to think, you know, to think through. But I don't know. Something tells me something might happen weird in that one. Because, you know, they're due to do something at some point. Yeah, and that's about it for those. Last week, though, with my prediction article that can be found on The Grueling Truth and also Sports News 24, I made 9 separate type of picks, whether it was against the spread or upset or, you know, picking games. I was 7 of 9. Of course, I was coming off of like a 4 of 8 or something, so I can't toot my horn too much. We'll see how this goes. All right, hit me with the crappy pick of the week that unfortunately – you know, it's my mistake. I'm acting like the old coach, you know, from Duke's there. I'm acting like Coach K's coach in Duke last week. You know, not last week, but just in general, like Duke's anything right now. They're a horrible team. They're barely Power 5 right now. But that was like my way of thinking, oh, they're improved this year. And unfortunately, now we fall to 2-1. Pick back-to-back road games, too. So we'll see how this pans out, sir. What do you got for me?
Well, we have a couple of returnees, you could say. And I know this because I
thought you were going to say a couple games. It's like, this mother effer. We're going to have
That's what you get for raining on my parade about my
USC. When we hit this stop button, we're going to have a long talk after this. Okay. All right.
These teams have appeared before. Now, their win-loss record is better than expected. But we're going some old faithfuls here. We're going to a 8 o'clock Central Time game. It's on ESPN Plus, so it's watchable. This is in the great state of Texas, which is great half the time. We have the New Mexico boys going to UTEP. We're going to El Paso, Texas. I believe I always confuse the Aggies and the Lobos. Is the New Mexico
Lobos?
Okay, yep. New Mexico Lobos against the UTEP Miners. So both, honestly, Chris, both are 2-1. And these are teams normally who we do our crappy pick of the year, and they're like 1-8. So I want to say that the boys are starting off hot this year, but that doesn't get you out of the gutter of you being a regular team on this episode. So it is currently a 1.5-point home favorite. So Vegas is not even giving the UTEP Miners the 3-point love. Sometimes you bitch at me for having point spreads that are a little too high. This one's almost a pick'em. This is like legit is a pick'em. It's an over under of 54. It's going to be 90 degrees and partly sunny. So what does your gut say on this incredible Sun Bowl New Mexico Texas border war matchup?
I remember one time one of my buddies went to the Sun Bowl. He's from El Paso and it snowed. He's like, what in the hell's this, dude? And it was a Big Ten school that was down there. Actually, I think it was Big Ten against Miami. Maybe I'm mixing up years, but he's like, this sucks, dude. I went to this damn game. And anyway, But good old Sun Bowl, definitely picturesque. We can't really dog this stadium at all because it's a really cool stadium where it's set up and all that.
It is.
But we could dog the shit out of the program. So that's what we're going to do. You know, neither of them are putting up huge points. Obviously, New Mexico sitting at 20.3 is not really what you – I know Patino coaches the basketball team now. We may need a little help there on the other side. You know, well, they don't – they're not going to have shooters probably either because we know Patino couldn't recruit shooters. So, they're, you know, they're only put up 20, which is pretty bad. 27 is not great in college, but, you know, maybe they played some tough teams or whatever. Neither are really that good on defense, which usually is exactly what this whole crafty, crappy pick of the week is all about. But then when you look at this year, okay, they're close. I mean, you'd say UTEP runs the ball a little better. They move the ball a little better, whatever. We get that. But they both give up a fair amount of passing yards. But the rush allowed really stands out, 85.7 for New Mexico. And, you know, what's going to happen? Almost 200 points by, or 200 yards by the Miners on the ground so far this year. 34 to zip. They just got beat on the Lobos. Both of them played pretty good teams in their last outing. Here's the difference. I got two differences for you, okay? UTEP had a bye week, okay? And we know when you start minding some stuff, okay, that was cheesy. Good things will probably happen with the bye week, okay? Not only that, but when you look at the head-to-head competition this year, I'm going to go with UTEP because they dominated, you know, New Mexico State. Oh, shit. New Mexico is going to – you think New Mexico is going to be pissed that they beat New Mexico State and they're gonna put on for New Mexico? I didn't even think about that. Oh, my gosh, man. Now I'm confused. But if you think it's going to be easy just to walk into the Sun Bowl, it's not going to be. Wilson looks like he's a pretty good quarterback, 6-1, whereas Hardison is 5-4. He better watch those picks. Give it to Awat, who's running the ball really well. They got a wide receiver there. Wow. Okay. So I'm going to mind my way to a 3-1 record. I got UTEP protecting that home Sun Bowl.
All right. Well, we have a really interesting alumni battle for the first time, Chris. It's actually a brothers battle.
Oh, wow.
I shake you not. So the list of people who went to New Mexico, they're famous. Again, Google's taking out pictures of those bastards. The most famous, and this is ranker.com that apparently ranks all alumni. New Mexico's most favorite person's name is Elise Sewell. She's a 39-year-old woman who's still alive, who's an American fashion model. Then we got Penny Marshall, who's a TV director. And then you have the wrestler Eddie Guerrero. Okay. And after that, the list is, oh, and there's Hank Baskett, who is a football player from the Eagles and the Vikings. That's about as good as it gets. But it's interesting, too, because when you go to the ranker list for El Paso, fourth on the list is Hector Guerrero. So you have a battle of former WWE wrestlers and Eddie wow. Guerrero against Hector Guerrero. Hector went to the University of El Paso and Eddie went to New Mexico. So maybe it's not a shit football game, Chris, but when you have WWE brothers facing off against each other, that literally made my day for this column.
That's and, impressive.
And like usual, we've said this name many times. Mia Khalifa, who's a video movie star, did go to UTEP because she makes a list every time we do UTEP. And I think with this third time we've done it. So, you know, if you've ever seen her work, she's a talented actress. Besides that, though, we have a battle of brothers. And Chris, I'm going to give my tip of the cap to New Mexico, because I think Eddie Guerrero is a better wrestler than Hector Guerrero, just for my two cents. I never saw him face off in the ring. Not sure if they did, but yeah, a battle of WWE brothers facing off in our first ever alumni sibling battle.
Wow, man, that's impressive. That is truly impressive.
So on that note, as we switch to a WWF podcast, Chris and I will be back next week. Again, my message is to bet the dogs. I'm hoping that all the dogs come through or take the slight road team favorites. And hopefully that pays off. If not, Chris might be going solo next week, and I might be reminiscing and rethinking all of my college football advice. So until then, as always, stay safe, wear a mask, and enjoy your time with loved ones. Enjoy the fall football season, and it's one of the best times of the year for all your sports. So we appreciate your support. We'll be back next week. The boys are out tonight. Peace.